Welcome to the Traveling Teams Media Ministry. To find out more, visit www.thetravelingteam.org.
Matthew 13, I don't know what's Matthew 13. So we've been talking about the kingdom of God, kingdom of heaven. We looked at that yesterday at the parable. And our organization has some really neat bumper stickers if you want to get some of them too. We came up with these. Well, just this morning, yeah. So thank you. All right. There's the parable that most of us know, so we're going to jump over reading the parable part and go to Jesus' explanation of the parable, and if I can read this all right. And so it's probably one that we've heard pretty often, the kingdom of heaven is like, and he's going to tell us some secrets here. And as we read through it, he goes, I'm going to give you the explanation, and starting in verse 18, it says, listen then to what the parable of the sower means. I'm reading from the NIV. You might have a slightly different version of the translation. When anyone hears the message about the kingdom and does not understand it, the evil one comes and snatches away what was sown in his heart. This is the seed sown among the path. The one who has received the seed that fell on rocky places is the man who hears the word and at once receives it with joy. But since he has no root, he lasts only a short time. When trouble or persecution comes because of the word, he quickly falls away. The one who received the seed that fell among the thorns is the man who hears the word, but the worries of this life and the deceitfulness of wealth choke it, making it unfruitful. But the one who received the seed that fell on good soil is the man who hears the word and understands it. He produces a crop yielding 160 or 30 times what was sown. You know, as I read that, I think probably growing up, and most of the time you hear a passage on this, is this still recording because I'm speaking into this now? Is that okay? Okay. Because I was going to say, if we're not recording, there's no need to use a mic. I'll just be loud. All right. When I hear this, a lot of times, you think about maybe salvation or people who come into church and they do good for a little while and then, you know, there's all kinds of what does fall away mean and all that. We're not going to get into a lot of the theological applications of this necessarily or implications because I'm going to use it way out of context. All right, so I'm treading on thin ice right here theologically using this passage already. We did that yesterday, so we're going to continue that thread on to today. All right. So, that's why I was asking for a recording or not because I was ready. You know, we'll edit that part out right there. And it gets back to Claude. All right, so when we look at this, though, at this aspect of what is it really talking about when it talks about the seed and all that's happening, what is the goal, the end goal of the seed happening? Why? We have a garden in our house. We started a garden a couple years ago. I thought it'd be kind of cool. And I took my boys. So this a couple years ago. They're 10, 8, and 5 now. So a couple years ago, they're much younger. And I go over to my dad's house, and I said, Dad, I want my boys to learn how to garden. And I saw like a show on TV or something, you know, and it's like, got the bug. And so I said, can you help them? But I want them to do a lot of the process of gardening. Like I want them to rake out the rows. I want them to hoe it and all that kind of stuff. I want them to put the seeds in. I want them to put the fertilizer. I want them to water it. It's going to be their garden. He's like, yeah, I can help them do that. So I kind of go in the house. I was doing a couple things. I come back out and my dad literally has my 8-year-old at the time. So that would have been Eli behind the tiller. He's reaching up, he's tilling the ground. And the thing's like bouncing all over the place because the ground's hard, it hasn't been tilled up yet. And I'm just, you know, watching, like, what's going to happen? And then he's got Zeke comes over, he's tilling, he's going to let him use the tiller. He's having to reach up over his head to get to the actual things. He's 6 at the time, you know, and then Luke's walking behind him, like pushing him, like he's helping, you know, in that way. And so I was like, Dad, this is not exact. I thought you would till the ground first and like get it ready. He's like, no, they got to learn. All right, you know, like, so, you know, they did it. They did okay. They tilled it up and they raked the whole thing. But there's this process. But what we were trying to do when we made the garden, what was the result that we were looking for out of the garden? Fruit. Yeah, we wanted the fruit or the vegetable. We wanted those things to come back to us. And so as you look through this, I mean, we're looking for this fruit to come out of, and this is what the kingdom is like. Well, what keeps the people from having the fruit? But let me ask this. We're going to switch gears a little bit. I'm going to ask you a different question, and then maybe we can think about some of these verses right here. No one's named Stephanie, right? I don't think I've met anybody named Stephanie. And I haven't met anyone named Rob. Is that correct? All right. Stephanie and Rob, Mike. Stephanie and Rob come to this, they really have a dream about their lives being used on the mission field one day. They get real excited. 4 years from now, though, Stephanie and Rob are still not on the mission field. Why don't you think they're there? Just give me some reasons. Why do you think if a person comes to something like this, gets real excited about maybe seeing their lives? Now, I know that not everybody needs to go, all right? So Let's put that aside. Let's say this is a couple that really they get excited about maybe going one day. They're seniors. They just graduated. 4 years from now, they're not there yet. What are some reasons you think they're not there? They bought a house, all right? They had some kids. School debt. They got a good job. Parents said no. Someone in the family sick. What about the support? They couldn't raise it, or they were scared to ever start? All right. It was too much information. It was hard to for it to, what's the, assimilate is the word I'm looking for. Yeah. They never what? It would be too hard to learn a language. They counted the cost. There, yeah. Yeah. But man, it's crazy. They found something else that was good. Ow. Just life. Yeah. Rob and Stephanie, let's say they're engaged, they got married, and now, yeah. They can be married, they don't have to be. Yeah. Okay. So some other issues cropped up in their life. It just changed their mind. Yeah. Yeah, they're just kind of stuck in. Sometimes I call that analysis paralysis. I don't know if that's the, you know what I'm saying? Like you just, there's too many choices and you're like, you're like searching all that. Yes. Okay. Or if they were, that would also be a problem. Yeah, either way, yeah. Yeah. All right, so but let's say they are not married, but they start dating someone who's not as interested in going, yeah. Good. Anything else? What's that? They just didn't think they were prepared, maybe. Is that what you're saying? Yeah. I'm not prepared to be. I'm not cut out to be. I'm not good enough. Maybe some of those kind of things. Good. Scared? Okay, yeah. Yeah. They wanted to do ministry here among internationals, yeah. Yeah. Which is, and some of these things are legit, right? I mean, that would be, even finding something good would be something legit. Did you have your hand up? I see that hand in the back. Thank you. Good. Yeah, so yeah, we're going to get into that a little bit here, so that's a good point. Just the idea of life just throws you curveballs and stuff. I mean, just obstacles that you weren't expecting to come up, you know, that are going to come your way. I can promise you that once you start taking a step towards the mission field, that things will come up, you know. But let's look at scripture here and think of, and I think you hit, I probably just any all that I would have been able to name. But let's look at this passage again, treading on thin ice, I know, contextually with this passage, all right? But we're gonna tread it together, so we're all going to fall through, yeah, mess up. But what are some of the things that keep the fruitfulness happening in this passage here in Matthew 13? If we are saying going to places where there's little to no access to the gospel and seeing fruit happen in those places, what are some of the things that keep that fruit from happening or that person from seeing that fruit happening? Does that make sense? Satan. Persecution. Worry. Yeah. I love how it puts it here. The deceitfulness of wealth. Isn't that crazy? When I was on the way here, when I landed at the LAX, I kind of took the roundabout way and went through Bel Air and all that kind of stuff. You know, I'm sitting next to Maseratis and, you know, Lamborghinis, saw a Ferrari, who knows how many Bentleys forever, you know, driving past those houses. And I'm always just like doing the Jim Elliot thing in my head the whole time. Like, you know, he is no fool who gives what he cannot keep to gain what he cannot lose, you know, kind of thing. until you see like a fish on a Maserati, then you're like, ugh, you know, like, but he gets both, you know, like, he was like, but you're hanging on to some of those hopes and promises, you know, like in the, but yeah, the deceitfulness of wealth, but you know, I couldn't help but think, you know, seeing some of those things that like, I mean, if anyone should be happy that they still needed the pills and still OD'd on them. But how many people over this past year, just celebrities, over this past year who OD'd on pills? It's amazing. And you're thinking, man, if anybody should have it. All right, so the deceitfulness of wealth. Yeah, did we hit all of them? Is there any more? I think we just about got it. Yeah. Isn't that interesting? Do you think we probably covered most of those? Probably a couple in there that we didn't cover. The first one, Satan. And I think probably some of these other things are that he uses those tools to kind of slow us down. Don't you think he would want to slow someone down that's going to go to a place where he's had control for so many years that he would want to slow that process down? Maybe he would throw some things in your way to keep that from happening. I was talking to a person who actually, they joined up. They came, were appointed with us, with our mission agency, United World Mission. And once they got out there, one thing after another just kept happening. And they weren't like major. They were just kind of small things all the way along, right? And they were like, I don't know. I don't know if I'm in anymore. I don't know if I can just, you know, I'm getting all these curveballs. And it's like, okay, look, I'm going to spur you on a little bit. Okay, is what I was kind of telling them. I'm going to try to encourage you, but I'm going to spur you on just a little bit too. Like, are you saying that's it? That's all it took Satan to throw my way to keep me from going? And I'm not trying to guilt you into it. Like, if you don't need to go, you don't need to go. That's cool. But I'm just saying, think about it. What, this is all it's going to take to stop you from going where you feel like God has for you. And the answer was yes. That's all it's going to take. So they had to drop out. You know what? There's legit reasons. Yesterday, I was on the phone at a Starbucks just down the road to a guy whose dad doesn't remember who he is anymore. Doesn't remember who his wife is. His, you know, this guy's mom is. And he's like, he's been in the process. Their 98% of their support is raised to go to Kazakhstan. On the phone at Starbucks yesterday, before I got here, he goes, I can't go. I can't go until this is taken care of. I mean, that's a legit thing. He goes, I need to honor my mom and my dad. I've got to say, there's no one else that can do it. Like, I get that. There's things, right? And he goes, we just kept pushing through. We kept pushing through because we just kept trusting that God was going to heal and all those kind of things. It just hasn't happened. I don't know what God's doing. But there's things that are going to slow you down. There's things that can do that. But we have to realize is, are those things, are they external things or are they things that are internally? Does that make sense? That are going to allow us to keep going through this process. Let me ask you this. There's some things that could keep people from going. One of the things that we say at Expedition 237, I'm going to explain what all this means here in just a little bit. One of the things that we say, Expedition 237, the organization I work, United World Mission, Expedition 237 is a program with United World Mission. We say we want to see an entire generation live in a lifestyle that reflects God's heart for the nations. Does that make sense? Let me say it again. We want to see an entire generation that reflects God's heart. We want to see an entire generation live in a lifestyle that reflects God's heart for the nations. What do you think that means when you hear that? What is a lifestyle that reflects God's heart for the nations look like? I see that hand. Go ahead. Yeah. So no little fishes on Maseratis. It might be one of those, yeah. Anybody else?
Hello.
The geography might change, but the lifestyle doesn't. Yeah. There's some other things, some other ways you would live a lifestyle that reflects God's heart for the nations. Okay. Yeah, embrace people from other countries. I'm repeating because I know it's been. These gaps. What do you mean? Yeah. just being able to commit to something and stick with it. Yeah. Yeah. It's the he loves me not kind of, I'm going to do it, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it, I'm not going to do it. Yeah. So really kind of having values that reflect an eternal perspective. Praying in that direction, yeah. Kind of get into a simple lifestyle, yeah. That's good. Yeah. Unpack that a little bit for me, too. Yeah. There's a good, you got one? Is that okay? All right. Yeah, just bringing it up all the time. I mean, you don't want to be like I was. That's it. You thought, so, you know, I was talking about yesterday how. All right, tonight we're talking about dating and missions, you know, but like, you can lead Bible studies, talk about, use missions as the backdrop of a lot of your examples of things. Yeah, it's good. Just growing your heart for other people, your love for them, your compassion, yeah. 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 How many of you have ever read Screwtape Letters by C.S. Lewis? A few of you have. It's a great read. It's interesting. It's a book that's a little bit backwards, you know, because it's coming from the demon's perspective, their point of view. So it's written from that, you know, from that side. And the apprentice demon is writing to his uncle Screwtape, and he's trying to get advice on what to do with his subject, who has become a believer. And so he's going to throw all these major temptations at him. Like he's going to give him the, you know, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And he's like, you're going to lay them all out there. And I don't think it's exactly how C.S. Lewis puts it. But and then Screwtape comes back and he goes, no, 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 don't do that. Don't do that. Because if you do, he'll go so far down that he'll hit bottom and he'll realize his need for God. Just get him one step removed. Just get him one tick off of center of heart for the Lord. Just a little bit cool. Not totally. Because that way he'll keep going to church. He'll keep doing Sunday school. He might even be a good Sunday school teacher. But his passion is going to be one step removed. Does that make sense? It's kind of like, yeah. All right. But yeah, I think, you know, part of that, a lifestyle that reflects God's heart for the nations, I think part of that comes to something that Billy was saying too, where, and it's the other question, what do you think a lifestyle of readiness looks like? A lifestyle of readiness. Does that make sense? Being ready to go. So you might not be the person who's going to go right now, but living a lifestyle, how can, what are people saying, Rob and Stephanie, how can they live a lifestyle going forward for the day, live a lifestyle of readiness? Yeah. There's a willingness to take a step to do something. Right. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Or in other words, so being strategic, probably another word would be intentional. Being really intentional about how you live. Yeah, go ahead. Steady. Anybody else? All right. No. Right. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, that's good. So doing it like a self-inventory of some things. I had another conversation with someone yesterday morning, and we were talking about generational things and trying to mobilize, and I'll say what they said about the generation. You said commitment here earlier. They said one of the issues that we're running into is just a lack of self-awareness. So the inability to take that inventory and say, what are some of the weaknesses maybe that I have as a lifestyle or as a personality that I justify, well, that's just how I am, or that's just how, you know what I'm saying, some of those kind of things that are really sins, basically, but not being willing to be self-aware about some of that. Does that make sense at all? Yeah. Good. All right, a couple more questions, and we're going to go through this notebook and this little book like a blitz. We're going to fly through it. You thought I talked fast yesterday. Just wait. Luke, did you get a haircut? Yeah, nice. Nice. All right. Yeah, that's good. Yeah. So, it's a good thing I don't have ADD anymore. Mike, one of the things that you said was sacrifice. And one of the questions I had written down is joyful sacrifice. Now, there's people that are on the field now who are there living joyfully and sacrificial. They are joyfully sacrificing some things. If you ask them, they probably would not use the word sacrifice. And if you really pinned them down, they go, okay, we are sacrificing a few things. Like we can't watch certain shows or we have to eat an apple and a piece of bread every day. But they are doing it joyfully. What do you think it means to have joyful sacrifice? Yeah. Yeah. You're so sly with your hand raises. So just go for one. Yeah, it's a book that uses joy more than probably any other. So if you do a study of the word joy or rejoice and those kind of things, the word or blessing, like those three words, the words sacrifice or suffering are always right, or trials, it's always right there together. Yes. Yeah. The joy that's set before him, talking about Christ and his... knowing that your greatest glory is in him exalted. Yeah. Throw a hand back here. Oh. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, the joy of being able to do that. Okay, she's going to make up for it, Amy. Amy, quick, you want to say something? Amy, quick, say it. Yeah. 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 Wow. Well, good. Those are good thoughts. And I'm sure you can keep mulling those over like as you kind of go through it. I'm going to outline a few things that I think will, some things that will help keep you on track, some things to be thinking about. If God is putting that in your heart, if that's kind of a dream that you have of what your life could look like overseas, here's a few things. And we're not going to cover all of them. I just want to highlight a few of those. And then I'm going to tell you in just a few minutes about Expedition 237 as well. So, but as you go through, I think one of the most important things to do if you're thinking about missions, leaving from here later this summer, is to be strongly connected to your church. Any agency that you would want to join or be a part of is going to want to know about your church connection. And when you start raising support, it's going to be really important to have a church connection as well. So here's some ways to do that. Is just start to find out, like, at my church, do they have a missions policy? Do they have a missions committee or a missions team? What is their missions policy? What does it take to raise support in this church? Do they have a place in the world that they're focused in? Some of those kind of questions that are in here as well. Start meeting with the missions pastor and just say, hey, look, I think I want to try this missions thing out. I mean, I think that God is calling me to that, or God has put this in my heart. I don't know if I could use the word calling yet or not, but I definitely would like to volunteer and see what's going on in those areas. So start looking for, make sure you have a church home and that you're getting very involved there. You know, another thing on page, this checkpoint two, you can check off number one, almost, not yet. Next Wednesday, you can check off that one, right? So that one is. Some of you probably already taking the trip. Number three, I would say, is huge for me. It's funny, when people come up to me and they're like, dude, I'm so into missions. Like, that's cool, you do missions? Yeah, I'm really into missions. I'm like, that's awesome, that's cool. What, like, who do you support? Like, what missionaries do you support financially on a monthly basis? I have a friend who went one time and, you know, like okay, well, let's talk. So when you say that you're really into missions, what does that mean? I think one of the most important things you can do moving forward that will keep your heart turned in the right direction on that is to find a missionary that you can support and then support him on a monthly basis, not like throwing some money every once in a while. If you're looking for a missionary to support, there's some prayer cards probably right back. Mike right over here. Yeah. But get that picture on your refrigerator or on your wall or wherever that, your mirror, wherever that is, and start praying for them on a regular basis. Support a missionary. Support your friendly local missionary. And the next one, just developing that lifestyle of personal preparedness. And we talked about some of these. You know, number one, I said, you know, you can enlist a community to help you grow in these areas spiritually through a community of grace. Let's just face it. We all have different struggles in different areas in our lives. Maybe you're struggling with bitterness or forgiveness or some of those kind of things. And things that will crash you like crazy if you ever take a step into the mission world. Or maybe there's other sin issues that you're struggling with or through. Find a community of grace that can help you find healing in that in Christ. Ministry skills through your serving at your church. Find out what those skills are. You were saying earlier, like, find out what those strengths and weaknesses and those kind of things are. You know, you might have nunchuck skills. Or whatever skills you have, like, find out what those are. Just physically through the personal habits, we talked about that. Financially, there's a lot of great resources out there from Crown Ministries to others where you can watch your personal debt. Be careful how you're spending money. You know, when we came back from, when my wife and I graduated from college, we're married. Before we went to Ukraine, we had a year, and we were living debt-free for that year. But every decision we made, we knew we were leaving in a year, right? So it's like, let's get that couch. Why? Where are we going to put it next year? I don't know. So, I mean, like, everything that we did, every purchase that we made was like, well, what are we going to do with it a year from now? And if we didn't know, like, it was like, well, forget it. You know, don't, I'm like, every decision, let's get that picture we're hanging on our wall. Why? We're going to, you know, it was mainly Rachel saying, why? Why? Because I was wanting to buy, you know, all kinds of things. So, so just ways. And I put relationally here, too, because that's, I think, one of the ways that, again, we talk about Satan and things that he uses. I think it's one of the strongholds that he brings into our lives in so many ways. It's just breaks in relationships. You know, if you look at your life and go, okay, there's someone that I'm having a grudge, or there's people that have a hard time forgiving, or there's struggles relationally that I have. And I tell you how you can tell if you do or not, because someone already came to your mind when I was talking about that right then. But when you look through the New Testament and you find all the times that it talks about Satan, his schemes, and all those kind of things, pretty close within context of that, it talks about some type of relationship, right? In your anger, do not sin. Why? Because Satan, all these kind of verses like that. All right. Through the if-when hurdles, there's lots of ways to kind of think through those. There's great articles and stuff on the Traveling Team website on all that. Great things. Number five, there are roughly 237 nations in the world. How will you decide where you live out a missional lifestyle? which brings me to Exposition 237. So we're going to unashamedly for the next 2 minutes just promote ourselves, all right? Promote Exposition 237. United World Mission is all about Chapter 14 in the Perspectives course, which you're going to take next time. It should have been today, really. It would have been helpful. Yeah, it's the Advancing Church Planting Movements, or Spontaneous Church Planting Movements. And so there's all these buzzwords that go with that, from being facilitative to doing it through nationals to having reproducible churches and all those kind of things. So historically, United World Mission, my mission organization, has done that with career missionaries. You sell the farm, you give it all up, you go, you learn language, you go to pre-field training, learn language, and then get there, live there for a while, get to know the culture, find the church planters, the nationals, and this is a huge process. Very worth it to go through the process, but it's a huge process. And as a youth pastor, remember I was saying, give me a reason you can't spend 2 years somewhere on the mission field. And I was saying this all the time. And so I was having students who were beginning to really feel like, well, maybe God could use me on the mission field somewhere. And they were beginning to take steps. And they were coming back. And as I would debrief them and talk to them and talk through their experience and all that, I began to understand what people really need, especially this generation, what they really need is get connected to a place where they can really be mentored while they're on the field. So not just go and have an opportunity to do something, but to go and really be invested into while they're on the field. So I approached United World Mission and said, hey, I know you're a career sending organization, but this is kind of my heart. Could I go somewhere overseas and be the type of person and be involved in the type of ministry that people could join me and I can invest into them and mentor them for 2 years so they could discover in the process of being there what their long-term fit is, whether it's on the field or coming back to the States and being a better giver, a better prayer, a better welcomer, a better sender, all those kind of things, right? And they said yes and no. They said, yes, we would love to see that kind of thing happen, where we are the type of organization that people can come and for 2 years. And, you know, 2 years is kind of a magic number for me because I think it's long enough to be on the field to ride the highs and the lows. You know, if you're there for just a few weeks, you can just, there's always going to be some lows. You've got to be able to ride through those. I mean, there's going to be times that you're going to have a white leather person and it's going to get ink all over it and you're going to be really ticked off, like in a country. Those are lows. And you can find out more about that story in other places, other times. But there are lows that you hit. So it'd be so important to have someone there that can walk you through those lows as well. So 2 years is kind of the number that I really wanted to see. Plus, that was my experience. And plus, you know, we want to help people get their own planets, as we talked about yesterday. And so we thought, man, if we could connect people. And they said, what if you didn't go overseas, though, and do that? What if you stayed in the States and helped us launch that as an organization? We're in about 35 different countries, but we're being very selective in where we're placing people for the two-year thing. And there's a few criteria that we look for, but one of those is that there's really a mentor there. In other words, just because you're a great missionary does not mean that you're a good mentor, right? And so we're finding people that really have that gifting, that bent, that really have a heart to see your generation invested into and invest in the next generation of long-term missionaries. And so that's kind of the idea behind Exposition 237. And what we love to do is help take people that are thinking, okay, maybe I could have a long-term fit. I don't know what that could look like, and help connect them to service opportunities. Right now we're in China on the Tibetan border, and we're also in Thailand and Bangkok doing university ministry. There's churches that have been planted out of these small groups for using English and discipleship as people come to that. A church that has a vision to see everyone on campus hear the lips of someone from their church as nationals, not from you, but to come and walk along beside the nationals and help them do that. We're also in a few other places, but I'm going to kind of stress the 1040 aspect of it. So those are the main two areas right now. We also have people in Nepal and Kazakhstan and a few other places around the world too, but those are kind of our strongest places as far as where you can go and fit with the team in Thailand and also in China. So there's that right there. I'm out of time. Any questions? Right, let's say you're a sophomore in college, you're going into your junior year, you've got at least 2 years, maybe longer if you're going to do something else. You know, a lot of what I said in this, I would just be real careful. I know sometimes you can't avoid student loans, I get that. And Billy and I are working on a plan for you. But there's way you can avoid some debt, but I would be real careful about watching consumer debt and lifestyle debt. Does it make sense? The difference between those. I would also be real careful about dating. Someone brought that up earlier too, you know, and I know, like, when I knew that God really wanted me to be in ministry and especially missions, you know, like, you would meet people and it was like, you know, hi, what's your name? Have you ever taken Perspectives? What? Don't worry. No need to go any farther, you know. But it's always like, you know, have you ever taken Perspectives? If I say yes, will that get me a date with you? You know. Yes, I have taken what is it called? But yeah, I mean, honestly, like, be careful. I mean, on those kind of things. I mean, that's good. That can crash you pretty fast. I would say too, if there are some of those, if you need a community of grace to walk through some struggles with you, find that community of grace and walk through those struggles. They're not going to go away by yourself. You're not just going to be able to go, okay, I'm just going to do better next week. I'm just not going to be angry with people next week. I'm just not going to look at that stuff on the internet next week. No, you are. Until you find a community of grace to walk with you through those things. I would say too, pray. If someone brought that up, be intentional about prayer. When you look at the news and it says something about China, pray for China. When you watch, you know, you turn on CNN, I don't know if maybe you guys don't even watch the news or anything. Like, I realized the other day I was driving down the road and I was like, wait a second, I'm listening to talk radio. What happened? You know, it's like, I turned into my dad. So I'm like, found some hip hop real fast. I mean, light hip hop, you know, roll the windows down. But pray. I mean, when you see those things that are happening around the world, pray. I would find an advocate, too. I would find someone that I could say, look, this is what God's doing in my life. Can you keep walking with me through that process? Does that make sense? What about you? You got any other thoughts, Billy, Mike? Any other thoughts on that? You know, I would find, you know, the whole welcoming, some of those kind of things, the international students, ways to do that. But I know some people have a more natural bent towards being evangelistic than others. But the gospel is effective when it's verbal. It has to be shared at some point in time. I mean, you can live a good lifestyle and, you know, all those kind of, do good works before men, you know, so that they're praised the Father in heaven. But at some point in time, unless you're like, it's verbal, it only goes so far. And I would, you know, when I was kidding earlier, like, hey, I'm really into missions. Really, tell me someone you support. I would say this too. I want to become a missionary. I go, that's great. Can you give me a list of 5 people that you're asking God to use you to see them come to Christ? Who do you know that's not saved? And what's your strategy of seeing them come to Christ? Because it's not going to happen on the plane. You're not going to, like, be on the plane flying over and all of a sudden it's like, I am an evangelist. It's going to be a lifestyle that's going to be happening now. Yeah. So, and I'm not saying you've got to, like, every second you have is like, you know, you're just trying to, you know, hand out tracts or you share Christ in all those kind of scenarios, but who is it that you're praying for? God, help me see this person come to know Christ. All right. Yeah. That's cool. Right. Yeah. And the welcoming thing, you know, like, it's, my wife, when we were living in Houston, she was, you know, she was pregnant with Luke. We were going to the YMCA. She was doing classes up there. And there's a whole other group of, there are like prenatal classes, and there's all these other ladies. And they were all international ladies. So it was three Muslims that were in the group, a Buddhist, and then an atheist. And they're looking for people to hang out with. I mean, they're just looking for that. And it's, I didn't say this, edit this side of the thing, we'll see where this goes. I would say probably those ladies, once we said that we're going to be moving, we've been at our church for 10 years, when we said we're moving, were reached out to her more than the ladies in our church did. The ladies in our church didn't know what to do with that. You know what I'm saying? Like, they didn't know how to, be engaged in conversations because we were doing something that was so foreign to their thinking. But these international ladies, they all had moved. And they were so kind. And after we moved, stayed so in touch with Rachel. Because she had chances to pray with them over the years of developing these relationships with them. You know, they would go out to eat on a regular basis. They would do birthday parties. And, you know, everybody shows up. And it was just incredible the relationship she was able to build with those people. And how often they stay in contact with her now. Good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. I would say, yeah, when I say China, you might start getting to know that there's people in certain areas, right? Because now you're supporting some people that are in different places around the world. Or you find out from your church some people that are there, and maybe what they're doing. So the earthquake happens, right? And you begin to pray. I pray for the believers that are there that they'll see this as an opportunity to share. I pray that you'll give them courage. I pray that you'll give them boldness. I pray that you'll give them the ability to share Christ in these situations. I pray for those who have been affected that they would, their hearts would now be open towards the gospel. You know what I'm saying? Those kind of things. So you hear about something that happens in India, and same thing. But for those believers that are there, give them strength, give them boldness, give them courage, give them wisdom, give them creativity, give them the ability to use this for your glory. Or for those who don't know you, just those kind of things. So I don't mean, you know, like, you know, our guys, it's funny, we were looking at, when you put Mongolia up here in the little quiz, every night we have certain people that we pray for, and there's some people we pray for every day. We're everyday prayer people for them. But there's some people my kids have just picked up on over time to pray for, and this one couple, Todd and Ellen, they're actually in Nepal right now, but they're praying about Mongolia. So one day, just kind of in passing, during the day, I told our boys, I was like, hey, they sent a picture. I was like, hey, check out this picture. It's kind of funny. I showed it to them. So they're praying about going to Mongolia. Well, that night, we get ready to pray. One of the guys prays for them and that they'll, you know, as they go to Mongolia, like, be with them or whatever. So that was pretty simple. Well, it stuck. And so now, all three of them, every single night, pray for that family going to Mongolia that they've never met. And there's other people, I mean, like, I have to, like, remember these people now and have to pray for them tonight. And those people, they don't, for whatever reason. But you find people that, just in your daily prayer time, it's like, I'm praying for that person. I have people that they've come to me. Mike, I think you heard, I was eavesdropping on you earlier at lunch. I was just saying, okay, we got to raise up this prayer. No, it was back here when you're talking to this other lady who's going to Africa. I need to raise up prayer people. So this couple, they have, and they're with Christar, so it's kind of a part of their organization, you know what I'm talking about. They have 100 people that pray for them daily. Daily. And when they ask us to do that, it's like, are you kidding me? That's the greatest thing. I've never been more honored in my life to have someone ask me to do that. And so they send regular prayer things. So now I know how to pray better for that area too. Well, any other thoughts? I mean, you had a lot of great input. I didn't have to really say a lot. I mean, I think you know, right? It's just the matter of staying the course and being intentional, having a strategy, staying ready, doing things in my lifestyle. Even if you don't end up going, even if you're going to be a better welcomer, a better mobilizer, these are all still things I think are good to be doing in your life, right? And if you're looking for a place to go for 2 years, Billy would love to talk to you in August. Good. All right. Well, I know it wasn't like maybe as funny as it was yesterday or whatever, but thanks for hanging in there with me and taking the time. Let me pray for you guys, because I know you got a lot going on in the next steps. Is that good, Billy? Are we good on? All right. Father, thank you so much for your grace, for your love for us. Father, thank you for a guy named Wally who shared Christ with me at a young age, and for opening my heart to you. Father, I pray for these guys here tonight that are at different stages in their readiness and their thought process of where they could be envisioning themselves overseas. Father, I pray that you would raise up people from this room that would go. Father, I pray that you would raise up people from this room that would be incredible givers, that would be blessed financially, that would make huge sacrifices, even in the blessing of their finances, to live a lifestyle that reflects their heart for you. Father, I pray for those that you've blessed with the gift of being able to pray and a heart for others, that they would seek out ways and find ways to pray with, to gather other people to pray for believers around the world, that they would have boldness and courage in sharing Christ. Father, I pray that you would help them to stay focused over these next few days as they finish out perspectives. Thank you so much for Ralph Winter and for this U.S. Center for Rural Mission, people like Mike who are here that have a heart to see a generation raised up with a heart for you that knows what's happening around the world, that intellectually knows what's happening. I pray that the heart would follow. Father, I pray for great rest tonight for everyone, that you would give them your peace as they go to sleep. Father, I pray that you would burn in our hearts the desire to see your name exalted in places where there's little to no access to the gospel. Father, I pray for people like me, as we speak and as we encourage and as we spur on, that you would give us the ability to speak well, to articulate ourselves well, to be able to speak truth in very loving ways, that we would not guilt trip anybody into going overseas, that we would not shame people into going overseas, but Father, we would just have a contagious love for you that overflows. In Christ's name I pray. Amen.
To find out more, visit www.thetravelingteam.org.